I'm Bill Charlap, and it's an honor to be here for Marion McPartland in celebration of the 30th anniversary of Piano Jazz, and to be here with a guest on the very first season of Piano Jazz, one of my all-time heroes, Mr. Cedar Walton. Welcome, Cedar.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Bill.
Well, it's great to be here with you. I love listening to your music, your compositions, and your piano playing, and I don't ever remember a time when your playing was not in my inner ear from listening to your records and being aware of your original voice and sound.
Thank you very much.
There are many things I want to ask you about, but before we do, it would be great to hear you play something. Would you like to play a solo for us?
Yes, of course. I've chosen Skylark. I think Hokey Carmichael had something to do with
it. One of the great Hokey Carmichael songs. Well, I can't wait to hear you play it. You're known as one of the important composers in the history of this music. At this point, pieces like Bolivia and Firm Roots and many others have become standard repertoire for jazz musicians. I wonder how you first got involved with composition and what were your inspirations there?
Oh, same thing, these visits to my... The part of my house which had the piano in it was, in the wintertime I had to wear my overcoat because it was somewhat cold in that part of the house.
Yes.
But I was determined to go in and try to emulate and make up pieces as an attempt at something original.
So you composed from a very young age.
Well, I was making up stuff, you know, but I didn't remember it necessarily the next day.
I see.
So, that's fair enough to say that I was attempting to be original at that early age. And I would try to write songs, parts out for my musician friends in my generation, you know, just forging, like a guy, I don't know, something like hieroglyphics. I didn't know what I was doing. And they said, see, these notes don't have any stems on them. I said, oh, I see. Excuse me. I just forged. I think it was just something I thought I could do, even though I couldn't.
Well, it's obvious that you can. Would you play one of your compositions for us?
Of course. This one I decided to name Midnight Waltz, sort of like a blues in 3/4 time.
All right. Did you make the move from Texas to New York?
Well, Bill, I went in a roundabout way. I started west, went out to Denver, mm-hmm. on family vacation one summer, and I saw the campus, a new campus at that time in the 50s of Denver University. I said, wow, I want to go here just because of the dormitories, which is not very intelligent, you know, at the face of it. But then they had a pretty nice music department.
What did you study there?
Well, actually, I started out in composition, and somehow that didn't really fit. They encouraged me to switch from that to a curriculum that led me into school teaching, music teaching in public school. For instance, we had to play all of the instruments, which I still think that's a good thing. That helped me later on in dealing with when I finally reached Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, which I think was a turning point, a stepping stone, if you will, to my interest in combining these sounds.
Do you feel that it helped you in terms of composing and arranging for those instruments?
Especially arranging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But from there, you came to New York?
Yes, I dropped out of Denver U and just stayed around town and played with local musicians for at least a year, if not more, before I ran into a friend. I had befriended a person who had, a non-musician, who had been to New York and told me, man, it's great. I want to go back, he said. So we got in the car. And we drove from Denver to New York in 1955.
So you weren't going there for a specific gig or anything like that. You were just coming to New York to be around the energy of New York.
Because I had met the gig I had in Denver allowed me to meet some of the leading musicians that were based here, you know, such as John Coltrane, the late Richie Powell, Bud Powell's younger brother, Charlie Parker, even. And they all, there was a stop on that circuit, they used to call it, in Denver. So where I played, they all were obliged to come because that was the only place sort of open at that time of night.
I see.
So I had the nerve to try to be a college student and play an after-hour gig, which finally the after-hour gig won.
How did you start playing with players like Kenny Dorham and J.J. Johnson and
You know, at one time... Birdland, which was located on 52nd and Broadway. On Monday nights, they would have players who were striving to make a name for themselves, me included. And I just saw Johnny Gary. He was the manager of Birdland. So Johnny could book those of us who were striving to be in the music business.
I see.
You know, but of course, we were already sidemen.
Yes.
So he would choose. I still have him to thank for booking me in those groups. So J.J. Johnson told me that he heard me at one of these occasions, and he hired me.
And you went on the road with J.J.?
No, we toured.
You toured, okay. Yeah. Yes. The terminology has changed.
Yes.
And then subsequently the Jazz Tet with
Art
Farmer and Benny Golson.
Right. Tootie Heath and myself who were playing with J.J. changed from J.J. to the Jazz Tet. Hmm. And we were in Chicago once with the Jazz Tet, and Art Blakey called me and asked me, was I ready? Because I had met him early on, and he, I guess, stored his image of me in his mind. And when Bobby Timmons left, Lee Morgan was leaving his group at the same time, because they both had very popular recordings out. Lee Morgan had one named Sidewinder, and... Bobby Timmons had one named Moaning.
Of course.
So they were
huge
qualified
hits.
To become leaders,
yes,
which Art Blakey encouraged.
Yes.
Because he had somebody waiting in the wings, which was happened to be me and Freddie Hubbard. We joined the same day.
Well, it was an incredible band. That's one of the great, great periods, of course, for Blakey and the Jazz Messengers with Walton and Freddie Hubbard, Wayne Shorter, Curtis Fuller.
Right, and Audra encouraged us to compose.
To compose and play your own music,
compared to the band I just left, which was all Golson.
Got it,
yeah,
got
so that was a turning point.
Well, I'd love to hear another one of your compositions, Cedar.
I'd be happy to play one. Bill, this one's called Bremond's Blues, dedicated to a friend of ours in
a Frenchman,
France.
No doubt?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
This is for Bremond. Maybe it would be nice to play something as a duet.
Yes, it would be.
I was thinking about All the Things You Are, the great Jerome Kern song that, you know, has been such a popular song for jazz players forever. We're going to play this with your treatment of the song, which your personality comes through in as a composer and arranger.
Oh, you're very kind, Mr. Charlap.
This is the Waltonized version of All the Things You Are.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.